as has already been mentioned a couple of times on our secular calendar, the observation of things that we mark from one week to the next. Today is that day that we make remembrance as Father's Day. We mention those that are our earthly fathers. We remember those who have gone on, but it is because of their influence and because of the place that God has given them. Don't ever underestimate, brethren, just how important that place is in God's sight, because He planned it that way, but in the life of His children as well. I want to ask you, though, a question today. We're a little different question. If you look at the advertisements that go on the radio, or listen on the radio, or watch on the television, you'll find a lot of things that are trying to convince you what fathers want. They don't want this, they don't want that. They do want this, they do want that. I'm going to ask you a different question. Rather than what you want, fathers, what's the most important thing that you do? Family, as you look at that one who is your father, what is the most important thing that that man does? Well, I guess to some degree we can probably have different descriptions based on our circumstance. But I'm going to share with you something today that we're told in the book of Psalms, in Psalm 44, that ought to be the top of our consciousness. It ought to be the most important thing that we do. Read with me from Psalm 44, verses 1 through 3. These verses are given to us concerning the history of the nation of Israel. But there's a big principle that's stated in these verses. He begins by saying, "We have heard with our ears, O God. Our fathers have told us what work thou didst in their day in the times of old." There is our priority, brethren. Our fathers have told us what work God did in their day. And in days of old, how thou didst drive out the heathen with thine hand and plantest them, that is, planted the forefathers, plantest them with thy hand, and how thou didst afflict the people and cast them out. For they got not the land in possession by their own sword, neither did their own arm save them, but thy right hand and thine arm and the light of thy countenance, because thou hadst a favor unto them. Now, there's a lot of things that could be included in that third verse, but I want to focus with you this morning, in the time that we have, about the impact of the corporate statement, the statement that's made in the first verse. Our fathers have told us. It's written in the plural form, our fathers. It was a statement that's to be seen relative to God's people as a whole in the nation of Israel. Our fathers have told us of the work that you did, the work of God's hand in the history of Israel. Now, the work that God had done in the Father's day was principally immediately described in the deliverance of the land of Canaan as an inheritance to the nation of Israel. He over God overcame the peoples that were there. Now, that sounds almost cruel, but I want you to understand something and understand it in light of what God told Abraham all the way back in Genesis. God told Abraham that his people were going to be servants and slaves in a nation that would hold them in bondage. And that he would bring them out of that land. Well, we know that he was talking about it, about the land of Egypt. But he makes a statement in that declaration. He said that it wasn't to happen until a certain time because the iniquity of the Amorites was not yet full. There was an iniquity, there was a sinfulness, there was an ungodliness that went on among the nations who lived in the land of Canaan. And that was an idolatry, and that idolatry took a form, almost totally, a form that was a fertility worship, it was a sexual worship, it was a lustful worship, and it also involved offering even the children as burnt offerings. God said there's going to come a time when that wickedness will be judged, and when I judge that, I'm going to give that land to the seed of Abraham. And he did. That was the work of his hand. The people didn't conquer the land by their own prowess. Well, they fought the battles, yeah, but keep in mind the first time they saw who they were fixing to go in against. We can't do that. Those are giants. We're like grasshoppers in front of them. We can't fight them. Joshua and Caleb said, we're well able. God will give us the land. No, they'll eat our kids up. We can't fight that. And yet when the time came, God delivered that inheritance into their hand. He cast out the Canaanites. He also cast out Israel themselves when they gave over to idolatry. That was one of the things God's hand did as well. But what I want you to see today is that God had a message, that God's had fathers who told their children and their grandchildren and their nieces and nephews and people around about them what God had done, what His hand had done. And it's interesting that the psalmist acknowledges this and is saying, we have heard with our ears. Folks, we're losing sight of a very important work that we're to do, and that is the oral history of God's work in the lives of His people. There are some things that are written in books, and what's written in a book in one generation has changed the next generation. What's said to be history in one place is said to be incorrect by somebody else. I'm going to tell you that one of the things that we're to do is to faithfully, truthfully, and biblically, based on the Word of God, pass on the statement from our heart to the ears of God's children that come up under our care, what God has done. That term that's used, we have received with our ears. There was a receptiveness. You know, we tend to have in our culture today, when there's an older generation that's talking, we think, oh, they're old, they're out of touch, they're this, they're that. I don't want to listen to that. The people understood that when they were talking not about their opinions, not about their political view, not about the economy. When they were talking about what God had done with His hand, there was a receptiveness to what was said. You see, when I talk to the fathers today, friends, about what about the importance of our talk, and I'm going to get to what we have to talk about in a minute, but when I talk to the fathers about talking about what God's done, I'm going to talk to everybody about how important it is that we take time to hear those things. You see, God intended it to be taught. Well, they didn't have any way to write it down then. No, they didn't. But the fact of the matter is, God didn't wait till there was a way to write it down to have it put forth. He had it passed on from heart to heart. Well, it came out of their mouth. Yeah, but it was to come out of their heart with a recognition of what God had done in their lives. Look with me at a couple of other passages. Look with me in the book of Deuteronomy for just a moment. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 7. This is part of the time when Moses was giving the law of God to another generation. God had given it at Mount Sinai, but all of those who had been adults at Mount Sinai were now dead. 40 years later, that generation had died in the wilderness. Moses is giving that law again to a new generation. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. Listen to this. And talk of them. And I understand that the idea of this is not so much a lecture, but rather a conversation. Not so much a set of notes and sermonizing, but rather a conversational sharing of what God said was His law and what God did in giving that law. How many of those, you remember, some of those people that were now getting this law had been children at the foot of Mount Sinai. Their parents died in the wilderness. This second generation come along, they'd still seen what happened at Sinai. They still had something to talk about. Talk, he said, of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. What God taught, what God did, what God said was to be a topic of their conversation. Now, I suspect, I think I'm accurate in making this assumption. I suspect that the fathers taught their children how to chop wood. They had to build a fire some way. I suspect that the fathers taught their children how to handle their herds, the cattle or the sheep. But in doing it, the core of the conversation was what God did. I had the opportunity of standing back against a wall here 2 or 3 weeks ago in one of our churches that was having a vacation Bible school. And I was standing in the dark back away from all the activity watching. And one of the things that was used in that, and I thought it's pretty appropriate to this. They were talking about friends. They were talking about the pets that they had. They were talking about things that they had seen. And they were talking about how these things were God sightings. Isn't that what they were talking about? What God had done? How what they saw was God's hand at work in their life. They were to talk about it when they sat down. Hundreds of years later, after Moses, if you go on over in Psalm 105, just a moment. Psalm 105, verses 1 and 2. Oh, give thanks unto the Lord. Call upon His name. What? Make known His deeds among the people. Isn't that what Psalm 44 talks about? Talking about the hand of God and what He had done in the lives of the fathers and forefathers. Sing unto Him, sing psalms unto Him. Talk ye of all His wondrous works. Folks, we gather around the table today and we talk about what we see on television. We talk about what we did at our job. We talk about a lot of things. But do we talk about what we saw God do in our lives? It may not be as dramatic as parting the Red Sea. It may not be as dramatic as bringing down the walls of Jericho. But it's every bit as much a matter of God's deliverance in our lives when we see His provision, when we're able to call attention to the fact that He parted the waters of a struggle in our life, when we're able to have our children see that those things didn't happen just accidentally. Those things are God's hand in our world. Oh, well, the world is a different place. The world's a wicked place. Now, God, if you go back into that 44th Psalm and read the rest of it, you're going to find out that there was wickedness then. There was struggle then. The people were down in the dumps and down in the mouth and then. It's no different. The world is the same today. It is the presence of God and His people in the midst of a world that is wicked and under Satan's control or Satan's influence. It's not His control. God's still the one that's in control. And that's ultimately what was going on among the forefathers. God had broken the power of Egypt. God had opened the Red Sea. God had delivered a country, a land unto them, a land that flowed with milk and honey, that had cities that they didn't build and walls that they didn't have to put up. God delivered all of that. Folks, I'm going to tell you, if we got nothing else to talk about, we've got the deliverance that He's done when He brought us out of a bondage greater than Egypt. When He delivered us from an obstacle greater than the Red Sea. When He tore down a barrier between us and Him that was higher than Jericho's walls. He broke the bonds of sin through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. He has delivered us. He's guided us. He's directed us. Look over in Psalm 106, verse 7. Our fathers understood not thy wonders in Egypt. They remembered not the multitude of thy mercies, but they provoked him at the Red Sea. They didn't do everything they were supposed to. Nevertheless, he saved them for his name's sake. What I want you to see was when this man, or when the psalmist said, our fathers have told us, he wasn't talking about a super spiritual, perfect group of fathers. He was talking about people that God said were stubborn and stiff-necked. He was talking about people that provoked God. And yet God was merciful in their lives. And they told others what God had done. I sat in the study yesterday afternoon and thought back in my life of some of the things that fathers in the Lord's kingdom had told me. Thought of one circumstance of my own dad who talked of a circumstance that he had been in World War II. He was working on an airplane. He was a sheet metal mechanic. He was working on an airplane. It was still loaded with bombs, shells. They were very careful in what they were doing. It got to be lunchtime. The plane was parked out away from where everybody else was. They sent a truck out to get them. The other fellow said that was with him said, no, I'm going to stay here. Daddy decided he was going to go eat. I come by this normally and naturally. My daddy liked to eat, so does I. So do I. He taught me that was God's provision, by the way. But before daddy got back to the mess hall, the plane where he had been exploded. The man who stayed was killed. Daddy lived the rest of his life with the awareness that for some reason God had moved him to leave instead of stay. God delivered him. And it was from that deliverance that our family eventually came. After he got back, he met my mother, myself, my sisters. But there was that deliverance at that one moment that God's hand had done. It wasn't blind luck. It was that God had a reason for something later on. I moved to Cedar Creek in 1981 and had the opportunity to begin attending a service there that met every June. First Monday in June, at little church down the road from us at Rome Primitive Baptist Church. Church still there. But this service, every first Monday in June, was a memorial service for what God did on one particular growing season. That growing season had been a very harsh, hot, dry season, to the point that virtually all the crops were burning up in the field. All the community decided that they were going to quit trying to work on that day and come together to the house of worship. And they did. And they prayed. And the first time I attended that church, or that service, there was one of the men who was present who had been there on that day. And tears welled up in his eyes as he talked about the fact that before they got home, walking or riding in their buggies, before they got home that day, it was raining. The day had been no different than any other day. The day had been just as sunny and hot as any other day until on the way home they watched God bring in the clouds and open the rain. Just like Elijah watched God give the sound of abundance of rain. You see, folks, those are the things. Those are not weather. Those are not science. Those are God's hands at work in our lives. That's what we have an opportunity. That's what we have a responsibility to talk about. I had an uncle who was involved in the forces at the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. He was an ambulance driver. That particularly difficult period when it looked as if the opposing forces might break the lines of the American troops. For several days it was cloudy, it was stormy, it was snowy, until one morning the clouds were gone, the sun came out, and the air power was able to be effective in breaking the tanks and the other things that had pushed the bull. Why? I don't know. But when it was still snowing all around and the sun came out there that the planes could fly, God delivered those men from forces that were as wicked and as ungodly as the Egyptians and others had been before. Same thing. God's hand was at work. And I remember hearing my uncle talked to my cousin and myself about some of the things that he witnessed because those airplanes could come. You see, folks, it's little things like that that we have the opportunity. What has God done in the churches? What has God done in our church? What has God done in the lives of somebody in our church? What has God done in our community? What did God do even in the middle of the pandemic? Well, there were a lot of people died. Yeah, but there was a lot of people that were delivered too. And I'm one of them. And I can tell you that He did things in our past days that serve to give us encouragement that in the days to come, He's still the same God. And if you don't have anything else to talk about, you've got the record of the birth, death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ that one time God did. Won't ever be done again. Won't ever need to be done again. God delivered us. We have the written account of the Scriptures that are true. These are not opinion. These are true. Do we talk about those truths? We don't have to sit people down and lecture them. We can talk about the fact that God counts sin, sin. And we can point a finger at ourselves. We don't have to talk about them other folks. We can point a finger at ourselves and how God's forgiven us. But I'll tell you folks, the ears of our little ones, of our family members, hear and receive what God has done in our lives. If you go over into the New Testament in the book of Titus, Titus chapter 2, Paul talks about young men, young women, aged men, aged women, children. But this is what he said to the aged men. Okay? I have to put myself in that category. That the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, in charity, in patience. That the older men, fathers, I'll tell you, by the time, in our kids' eyes, by the time we get old enough to be parents and they're still little kids, we're the aged men. I don't care what age we are. But you understand that what he's talking about, that we are to be sober, is not uninebriated by alcohol. You need to be that. You need to be that too. Be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess. But the word literally means sound in your thinking. Careful, basically sound in your approach to life. You don't go off the wild end. You don't get blown away by wild ideas. You're sound in your thinking based on the Word of God. Grave, steady. Not that you never laugh, but frivolity doesn't rule our lives. Temperate. I have some self-control. A moderation. Let your moderation be known in all things. Sound in faith. That's the truth of the Word of God. Sound in charity. That love governs our lives. Sound in patience, in endurance. Fathers, if we're going to talk about those things that God has done, we see what God expects us to be. May we commit ourselves today that we would be sound in our thinking and sound in our faith and steady in our walk of obedience to the Lord. May we commit ourselves to that. May we commit ourselves to that for the good of our families and God's people round about us. But may the subject of our conversation, I'm going to tell you honestly today, one of the worst things that I see happening among people in a broad scale is that the thing that dominates the conversation of adults when children are sitting around is still how bad the government is, what this candidate said or done, what this party said or done, this group, that group. And there's just a general sense of discontentment that often permeates our atmosphere. We can't talk about the goodness of God and the wickedness of men in the same breath.
And unfortunately, I think our conversation of the goodness of God is the part that often gets left out. Our fathers have told us, and our ears heard it. They told us the works of your hand, God. Father, are we the fathers that our children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, do they remember us talking about God's sightings, if you use that term? Do they remember us talking about what God has done in our lives, what God has done in our... We have people today that want to wipe out the fact that the founding fathers of this country even mentioned God. You see, it's up to us to be the bearers of the word of what God has done, even in the history of this country. Best I can tell by looking around, not any of us here are old enough to have been around in 1776, okay? I understand. But we have watched. And we have learned. And we've witnessed one. Folks, where we get to the place where we are the fathers, we are the aged men. May the topic of our conversation, may the thing of which we speak, be filled with the glory and the grace of God, with His hand that's been at work in our lives. May the Lord help us, is my prayer. In Jesus' name.